Hey everyone, it's Nikki here. I am hosting this month's episode. Shanna and Talia are taking the month off. We have an exciting spotlight section for you today. Our guest, Thomas Gokey, a co-founder of the Debt Collective, joins us again. In this episode, we discuss the complexities of the threat to turn the student loan system back on. We also examine the latest developments in the Supreme Court and shed some light on the flawed legal standing of the Biden versus Nebraska case. And just a note, in this episode, we recorded it earlier this week, and since the episode has come out, the House has voted to repeal the Biden student loan debt relief. However, it's heading to the Senate. It should not go through, but if it does, Biden can still veto it. So just want to note that we do discuss it as something that is going to happen, but it has happened. So we're going to jump right into this episode. I'm going to welcome Thomas back to the show. So, hey, Thomas, thank you so much for being here. I know we're really strapped for time, so let's just jump right into it. The student loan payment pause, it has been going on for a while, but it is being threatened to be turned back on. Can they actually do it? Will it happen? What are your thoughts around it?
I don't think there is any way that they can turn payments back on in a practical manner, right? It's just not going to work. And I'm a little bit concerned that there's a media narrative that has taken root that this time they're really going to do it. I don't think there's any reason for us to give up any ground here. We should demand an extension. They can extend it. There is no good reason to turn the payments back on. So that's where we're at. And we've been here before, right? There have been times where they said, this is the final extension. It's the final one. And then they extend it again. So that's where we're at again.
And the Department of Education, are they actually capable of implementing this? Do they have enough funding or employees? It's pretty massive what they're attempting to do with what seems to be limited resources.
Even if they had funding, they couldn't do this, right? This is just everything at the Department of Education is broken. It's all held together with bubblegum and chicken wire. And they can't do simple things. Turning on payments for 45 million people, they don't even have the correct payment information. And they know this, right? There have been tens of millions of servicer transfers. Some people have had their account transferred multiple times since the payment pause happened. We know that with every one of these transfers, one out of five accounts has something wrong with it. So something goes wrong in that transfer process. They have the wrong balance. They have missing payment history. They have the wrong interest rate. So think about that for a second. The Department of Education is going to turn on payments for accounts where they know the balance is wrong, payment amount is wrong, and they're turning on payments for accounts that they promised would cancel. They would cancel, right? So it would be absolutely political suicide for the Democrats to restart payments. Trump paused your payments. Biden wants to turn them on. If that's what Biden's 2024 reelection campaign is about, there is no hope. I don't want to live in a fascist country. Mm-hmm. So I'm deeply concerned about the real life consequences of them doing this. And so I think they have to decide, do they love democracy more than they hate poor people? To paraphrase our excellent Megan Hunt from Nebraska, does the Democratic Party love democracy more than they hate poor people? And I am afraid we know the answer to that, but those are the stakes here. We're going to lose democracy if they do this.
And so I'm not really sure about this, but I think the Republicans recently proposed turning payments back on. What do you know about that? What do you think about it?
Yeah, so the Republicans are definitely trying to kill the payment pause and kill cancellation in every way that they possibly can. So we are expecting a vote for something called the Congressional Review Act, which is basically a mechanism where Congress can vote on something if they disapprove of something that the president does. And so what this CRA would do is kill cancellation altogether. But it would also put 4 months of interest during the payment pause, 4 months of interest back on everyone's account. So your account balance would go up. Congress is voting to send you a surprise bill. And it would also undo public service loan forgiveness for over 150,000 people who have already got it, right? So these are school teachers, nurses, firefighters who have already been liberated from the burden of student debt. And Congress is going to vote to put them back in debt and try to keep them in debt for as long as they can. So in terms of, does this really matter, or in what ways does it matter and doesn't it matter? Right. Let's say that we don't know if it's going to pass. So that's one thing. We don't know if the Republicans have the vote. Even if it does pass, it would also have to pass in the Senate. And my understanding, I'm not an expert on all of the nitty-gritty details of how Congress works, but my understanding is that for a CRA vote, a Congressional Review Act vote, they only need 51 votes, right? This isn't one of the things where you need 60 votes. So we don't know if it would pass in the Senate, but even if it did, Biden can veto it, right? So in some ways, this doesn't matter in the sense of it could actually become law, probably not going to become law. And then it's nice to get everyone on the record, right? If the Republicans and potentially some Democrats want to go on the record as opposing cancellation, I think there's a real, real disconnect between the people in power and the people, right? They just have no clue how important this is to people. And so if the Republicans want to hurt themselves and make themselves unelectable for generations, to some degree, this is, let's let them hurt themselves. You almost want to give them the microphone and have them talk more, right? But there's still an opportunity. We think the vote in the House is going to happen Wednesday, which would be, May 25th? Sorry, the Wednesday is the 24th. So we don't know when a vote in the Senate would be. So this would be a time where if you have strong feelings about whether or not cancellation happens or not, you could call your representative and let them know what you think.
You rolled right into the question I was going to ask next, which was, how do we continue to advocate for keeping the payments off, fighting against this, whatever they're going to vote on? We recorded this right before the vote. How do people keep advocating? What are the things people can do?
So I am concerned that what we're seeing from the White House is that they are blissfully unaware of how devastating it would be if they restarted payments, right? They have built their house on top of a volcano and they don't know it. So I always feel bad about telling people, oh, call the White House or write to the White House, because it doesn't feel it does anything. But the truth is that somebody reads every single message that gets sent to the White House, and they are compiling it. So they'll say, so many thousands of people wrote to us saying that they support this or they oppose that. And so if you feel angry, and we know a lot of people have just intense and righteous anger at the idea that Biden would deliberately restart your payment when he doesn't have to, when he could extend it further, write to the White House, call the White House, let them know, because they don't seem in touch with reality here. It reminds me of during the campaign, Biden promised no more fossil fuel drilling on public lands, period, period, period. That was his promise to voters. And people voted for him because they care about climate change and thought, this is, given the options that we were allowed to choose from, this was the best option to fight for climate change. And then once he was in power, he approved of the Willow Project, a massive climate bomb, a bold-faced, blatant lie. And the White House seems to have been genuinely caught off guard that people felt betrayed by them. They're just totally out of touch. And I think they're basically in the same boat when it comes to restarting student payments. They are just living on a different planet, and they're going to be surprised at the consequences, but they shouldn't be surprised. They shouldn't be surprised at all. And so I think one thing that student debtors can do is just contact the White House and let them know because they just, their concerns and their lives are just so remote from yours. They don't understand. They really just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. And we'll link in the show notes how you can contact your representatives so people can do that. So going back to the Department of Education, they announced that they want to potentially reinstate it starting June 30th, which is even before we've heard back from the Supreme Court. Do you think that they're doing this as a strategic move?
So the date that they're threatening to restart payments is super confusing, right? So it's 60 days after the court allows Biden's payment plan to resume, whenever that is. We don't know. We expect the Supreme Court to say something in June, but we don't really know when it's going to happen. Or if we don't hear anything by June 30th, it'll be 60 days after June 30th, which is, I think, August 27th. But for practical purposes, servicers have been telling people September 1st. So this is an example of how the Department of Education cannot do simple things, even communicate to people when they're threatening to financially devastate their lives.
Right.
They don't give you the dignity enough to even tell you when they're going to execute you. So what we're really talking about here as the worst case scenario is that they turn payments back on September. But there's no reason for them to do that. They don't have to do that. That is an intentional choice that Joe Biden would be making.
Yeah. And so close to the election, it just feels a little bit like a political nightmare.
So we don't know the details, but it's been floated in the press that maybe they'll restart payments, but give everyone a 12-month grace period where interest is accruing, but they're not going to count your account as delinquent for 12 months. If they do that, that means that the first month where payments are really, really, really due would be September 2024, 2 months before the election. Everybody knows that the Democrats are really, really bad at this. But could you imagine them? I mean, I'm just pulling my hair out here.
It blows my mind. It just blows my mind just how poorly they are running and doing these things. And so I would love for us to talk about the 14-page report titled "The Suit Against Student Debt Relief Doesn't Add Up: Flawed Claims of Legal Standing in Biden versus Nebraska." And could you please brief us on who might not have read that, what the findings were in that report?
Sure. So the gist of it is this, right? At the center of one of the lawsuits that's before the Supreme Court to kill cancellation is a claim, right? There's a central fact in this lawsuit. And it's a claim that the student loan servicer Mohila would be financially harmed by cancellation. And that in turn, the state of Missouri would be financially harmed because Mohila owes Missouri $105 million debt from decades ago. And Mohila has not made a payment on that for 15 years. And Missouri doesn't care. They said, yeah, we're never going to ask you for another payment. And Mohila has said, we're never going to make another payment in the future. And Missouri's like, yeah, we're cool with that too. But now they're saying, well, we have to kill cancellation for 43 million working class people. And we're going to use this debt that we're never going to collect from Mohila as the excuse, right? So, but the central claim is Mohila will be financially harmed by cancellation. And because of how this lawsuit has progressed really rapidly to the Supreme Court, and it skipped over the normal procedure where, right, the normal procedure is, oh, that's an interesting claim you're making. Prove it. Give us documentation showing that Mohila is going to be harmed. They never had to do that. At no point in this lawsuit was there even basic levels of discovery to verify the facts. And so it's frustrating because I listened to the oral arguments and the Solicitor General from Nebraska, who was arguing against cancellation, was just seemingly pulling numbers out of thin air, some back of the envelope math saying, well, it stands to reason that Mohila is going to lose 40% of their revenue. And this is back of the envelope math. And it's also someone who doesn't actually understand how student loan servicing works, right? So what we did is, there's so many unanswered questions here, but we went through Mohila's financial statements, and then we also made a number of public records requests to Mohila to get as much information as we could about how many accounts they would actually lose through cancellation. And when you crunch the numbers, even after cancellation happens, Mohila would have more revenue from servicing federal direct loans than they have ever had in their entire history, right? So just to the question, is Mohila going to be financially harmed? I think you ask any student debtor, if they're making more money than they've ever made, is that harm? And I think the normal person would say, it just doesn't pass the smell test here. And it's frustrating to me that the Supreme Court doesn't really care about the facts here. The law is crystal clear, right? And Justice Kagan said, when Congress passed this law, they couldn't have been more clear, right? The law is clear, the facts are clear, but the Supreme Court is corrupt and they're politically motivated, right? We know that the Supreme Court, the conservatives, the Republicans on the court, want to kill cancellation. The law is not on their side. The facts are not on their side. And so the task or the problem for them is how do they get around the law? How do they get around the facts in order to get the result that we all know they want?
Yeah. And I'm just reading through. On page 4 of the report, it states, rigorous and factual review has been encumbered on the effort of the citizen researchers like ourselves who rely on basic freedom of information prerogatives to complete an analysis that would otherwise have been taken up by legal research teams. As a result, the Supreme Court risks making a ruling affecting millions of people's lives without essential, accurate information. So if people cannot rely on the courts to perform this extent of their jobs in a fair, transparent manner, what hope can we hold on to that we will receive a just response and decision?
I have no faith that the Supreme Court is going to follow the law and do the right thing, right? This is a deeply, deeply corrupt court. This is a court that, I mean, the only way to accurately describe what they're doing is accepting bribes, right? And it's not just Clarence Thomas. John Roberts has accepted money directly into John Roberts' personal bank account from law firms who have cases in front of the Supreme Court. And it's being laundered through his wife. His wife is a consultant who places lawyers at different law firms. And it just so happens that she's very good at her job and people are willing to pay her $10 million when they've got business in front of the Supreme Court. Oh, well, we'll just sweeten the deal. And John Roberts won't tell us which law firms he's accepted money from. He just won't tell us. Have any of the law firms or lawyers arguing against cancellation made a payment to John Roberts? We don't know. He won't tell us. Neil Gorsuch was trying to sell a property for a lot of money, couldn't find anyone to buy it. He got appointed to the Supreme Court, and lo and behold, a lawyer with a lot of business in front of the Supreme Court decides to pay for the property handsomely. Neil Gorsuch included on his financial disclosures who gave him a $500 gift for a fishing pole, but he neglected to include who gave him all of this money to buy the property, right? He disclosed that he had sold the property, but he didn't disclose who he sold it to. And with Clarence Thomas, it gets even more egregious, right? Not just the billionaire who collects Nazi artifacts, but also one of the chief architects of the Federalist Society is giving money directly to Clarence Thomas's wife and saying, well, we want to launder this payment through a third party and we don't want her name to appear on. They know what they're doing is wrong. They know that they need to keep it secret. And you know, this is just bribery. That's just what it is. And so that's the reality of the Supreme Court that we're dealing with. It has no legitimacy, period. Right. So I think if they kill cancellation, we should not treat that as a legitimate act. The questions here are not difficult. Anyone can read the law. It is, you know, if you can understand English, it's a very simple law to wrap your head around. Congress authorized the Secretary of Education to modify or waive federal student loans in the event of an emergency, the pandemic. It's crystal clear. There's no wiggle room. So I just think that student debtors should understand if the Supreme Court rules against cancellation, they are shredding the Constitution, tearing up the law, and ignoring the facts. And we should act accordingly. There are people out there who put tinfoil hats on and claim to be the king of France and start barking orders at people. Nobody takes them seriously. We should treat the Supreme Court as having the same amount of legitimacy as someone who claims to be the king of France.
Yeah. So speaking of the Supreme Court, they're coming up with a decision whenever, we don't know. In your opinion, which way do you think the Supreme Court will go in regards to Biden's student debt plan?
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a close court watcher. I have asked lawyers and court watchers this, and I've gotten different answers, right? So the lawyers who really understand the law say feel somewhat hopeful, right? Because there's still this naive feeling that these cases are so weak, so meritless, on their face meritless, that it would just be a naked abuse of power if the court goes against us. But we've seen other cases where the law is really clear and the Supreme Court just has a political agenda here. So personally, I have zero faith in the Supreme Court that they're going to do the right thing.
Yeah. So should we receive a negative response from the Supreme Court, what are the next steps? What are we trying to rally behind?
So the good news here is that Biden has other authorities used to cancel student debt. So what he should do and what everyone should demand is that he uses those other authorities to cancel the debt. The trouble is, the way Biden canceled debt this first time, there was no problem with it legally. The trouble was that he gave the Republicans a chance to kill it, and he didn't have to do that, right? It would have been really, really simple to just cancel the debt automatically. And one of the things that we've seen from the public record requests to the servicers is that the servicers were prepared to discharge this debt within a matter of a few days. It would have been a very, very quick thing. The debt would have been gone, and none of these meritless lawsuits would have even gotten off the ground. So there are many righteous things we can say and should say about what the Republicans are doing to try to cancel student debt, try to cancel student debt cancellation, to try to kill cancellation. There are many righteous things that we should say about how corrupt the Supreme Court is, how lawless they are. But at the end of the day, the buck stops with Joe Biden, right? He screwed up cancellation by requiring an application. He didn't have to do that. And he didn't even have the application ready to go the day of the announcement. He gave the Republicans a chance, and none of us should be surprised, right? And so I think student debtors should have a few key things that they're looking for if the Supreme Court kills cancellation, to judge whether or not Biden is really fighting for student debtors, right? If he keeps the application, he is not fighting for student debtors, period. The application is the problem. He needs to ditch the application. He needs to cancel the debt automatically. He can do that. So one thing I'm worried about is that Biden is going to take a really, really cynical route here. And he's going to say, we're going to open with something called a notice and comment period. And then there's going to be this long rulemaking process. And it's going to take until after the next election to finish. But don't worry, we're fighting. We're doing everything we can. Come out and support us because we're fighting for you. If he takes that approach, it is, I think, very unlikely to succeed, right? He is giving the Republicans a very, very long runway to just repeat the same process and kill cancellation again, and not just kill it again, but to remove all of the legal authorities that future administrations would have to cancel student debt. So if he does that, if he says, we're fighting for you, make a public comment, everyone should treat that exactly the same way as Willow Project 2.0, right? That is him stabbing us in the back. So what should they actually do? They should cancel the debt automatically. It'll be really easy to tell whether or not they're fighting for us because you will see it in your balance. You'll be able to log in to look at your balance and it'll be zero, right? He can cancel it. He can cancel it quickly enough that the Republicans can't interfere. And that's what we should be looking for and demanding.
Does it feel he is doing this as a way to like shirk responsibility and kick the can down the road? It seems he can do this. We know he can do this. And yet he, at every turn, seems to just mess it up. Does it feel on purpose to you?
So I think there's a really big contrast between how the Biden administration has handled student debt cancellation and how quickly they moved when Silicon Valley Bank was going under, right? And all of these really, really wealthy tech billionaires were going to lose all of the money they had deposited in that bank. Within 48 hours, they bailed out the Silicon Valley depositors, right? They really cared. They did it quickly. They didn't require any applications. They didn't give the Republicans a chance to stop it. And if Bernie Sanders was president, he would have canceled student debt day one. And it would have been quick. It would have been done right. I do think it's fair to say that within the White House, there are different factions. There are people at the White House who really do care and are really trying to get cancellation to happen. And then there are others who are maybe sabotaging it. And so I wish that Joe Biden cared enough to do his homework and get the details right. And I think we can judge him by his actions. I don't want to try to read his mind, but
yeah.
I think it's fair to say that he didn't care enough to do it the right way. And they knew the right way to do it because we were all telling them, here's the right way to do it. So they just, I think means testing for them is a religion, and asking them to do this without an application is asking them to give up their God.
It's a very interesting way to put it. Yeah. So we're getting close to the end. I have two more questions for you. What are some of the best practices to keep student debt loan movement fresh and active? What are you all doing at the Debt Collective?
I mean, we're fighting as hard as we can. If they try to resume payments, I think many people have reached out and said that they're prepared to join a student debt strike. So that's one thing that we're working on. And then there are these other authorities to cancel student debt. And so we're trying to think about how can we make those authorities really real to people and to let them know that really there should be no excuse for not getting this right. And yeah, so hopefully there'll be more that we can talk about in the future as thing goes on. And I personally don't have any faith in the Supreme Court, but other people think that there's a real chance that the law will prevail. And so maybe I'm wrong to be so pessimistic about that.
I mean, you've been in the fight for a long time, and finally, we are talking about it. Finally, it's in the media. Finally, these things are happening. So there has been movement, but there's also been setbacks. So it's totally understandable that you feel that way. Is there anything I didn't ask you about that you want to tell people about?
I mean, I think the main thing at this moment is just the White House is out of touch about how damaging restarting payments are, right? The whole Biden campaign is about protecting democracy. That's what they're campaigning on. And it's true. Democracy is not exactly strong and thriving in the US right now. It is hanging on by a thread. But things could get much, much worse. They really could. Things can get much, much better too. But if the Biden White House restarts payment, I don't think any of us should take what they're saying about fighting to preserve democracy seriously. And I think history will judge them very, very harshly. So, but I don't want to win the judgment of history, right? Real people's lives are at stake. And that really weighs on me. I feel that in a way that I know that the White House doesn't feel it. And people are fighting for survival. This is life and death. We have to win. We really have to win. And I can't really predict the future, but I do think that the White House is kind of trying to put the genie back in the bottle. Everybody knows now that they don't really need to collect student loan payments, right? The pandemic has revealed the fundamental lie at the heart of our system, that these unjust debts that never should have existed in the first place have to be paid, right? And so there's a really big effort to pretend and to go back to where we were before. And I just don't think that's possible. The tectonic plates have shifted, and I don't know what's going to happen at the Supreme Court. I don't know what the Biden administration is going to do, but forces have been unleashed that are going to continue producing effects. And I think debtors just need to be organized. We have more power than they do if we're organized. It's just really hard to get lots and lots of people to act together. That's not an easy thing to do. But as these forces get unleashed, there will no doubt be opportunities to seize if we're organized enough to seize it.
Yeah. As we're leaving, I'm just super curious. You've been in this fight a very long time. What are you doing self-care-wise to make sure that you don't burn out, that you can stay active? What is some advice that you can give to other folks out there that might be just exhausted from this fight? What can they do to take care of themselves?
Yeah, that's really important. And I could use some good advice on that more than I am in a position to give good advice to other people. It has dawned on me that my mental health and happiness for the rest of my life kind of hangs on what happens at the Supreme Court. And $10,000isn't even, that was already too little. But knowing that 20 million beautiful human beings would be liberated from the burden of student debt, that is a real victory. And to lose that would, I think part of it is to give ourselves permission to feel bad about bad things. But yeah, we're just doing the best we can, everyone else. And if you're feeling hurt and angry, channel that in some positive direction, I guess.
Yeah, no, it is hard. And I do appreciate when things feel bad, you're allowed to acknowledge they feel bad and not have to put a rosy fake facade over it and be like, everything's great. Thomas, do you have anything you want to promote? Where can people find you, find more information about the Debt Collective? Any shout outs?
Yeah, I would say we're a membership organization. If you haven't joined the Debt Collective, to please consider joining and consider becoming a monthly dues-paying member, because we want to be accountable to debtors. We want to be a debtor-funded organization, and we could really use your support to handle whatever shape the fight looks like in the coming years.
Thank you so much for being here, and we'll put in the show notes all the stuff that you talked about so that people can find it. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much, Nikki.
If you like this episode of Matter of Life and Debt, subscribe and share it with a friend. It really helps people discover us. Matter of Life and Debt is hosted by me, Shanna Bennett, and created by Nikki Nolan. It is produced by Emma Klauber, Nikki Nolan, Talia Malay, and Shanna Bennett. It is edited by Talia Malay and Nikki Nolan. Transcripts and social media writing is done by Emma Klauber. Our theme music was created by F.A. Achman. Visit our website, matteroflifeanddebt.com, where you can listen to more episodes, access transcripts, and get additional context for the subjects you just heard about. Absolutely for free. The website again, matteroflifeanddebt.com. Thanks again for listening.